Digital FM.
As we get closer to what many of us in the industry call silly season, but a very serious part of our country's history, every 5 years we have elections, and every 5 years we have either a change or something, or rather something brand new coming into the fold. And one of the seats that has been highly watched, and I will have to be honest, criticized for the past number of years, is the Nairobi governorship. And in studio with me this morning is Richard Ngatia, who will be vying for just that. Richard, welcome to Capital FM.
Thank you very much, Wahid.
Great to have you with
us. Yes, yes.
I read about you. I've read about you for years, and we're going to get into all that as well.
Yes.
But how is you're gearing up for a big part of your life?
Sure.
From someone who is an entrepreneur, who is a business mogul in many aspects, this is something quite new and different for you.
For me, I don't think it is different. What we are doing really is to bring business to politics.
I see.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I think this is why we want to come and change how things are done in Nairobi, and of course try and fix the problems that we have seen so far.
Okay. Yeah. Before we get into that, let's talk a little bit about you as an individual.
Yes.
You are a self-made man. We know that.
Yes.
That's very public in the press.
Yes.
You've made a lot of money, but in healthcare as well, which is
yes.
great.
Yeah.
But tell us a little bit about you, Richard. Tell us about your growing up, schooling, and how you ended up where you are.
Yes, 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 yes. First of all, it is very important to know that I was born here in Nairobi, in Kangemi, a village called Kangemi. Not far from here, and I grew up in Nairobi and studied in Nairobi, and therefore my entire life I've been in this city, and I've seen this city grow. I've seen this city services being delivered to us, and of course I schooled in Lovington Primary School, and after CPE then we went to technical schools, technical high school, and after that, we went on studying in Nairobi, doing our diplomas and of course, higher education. The thing is that since we were young, we saw Nairobi service being delivered. We as children then could be able to, have recreation centers where you could have football pitches, you could go and play with your friends, you could, if you have any challenges, there were social halls and you could go and air your challenges, and they could be fixed almost immediately. We could see roads being tarmacked almost every 2 months or quarter. We could see where we didn't have tarmac, then there were what we call Maram roads. And I mean, it was possible. Security was ample, I can tell you. In our schools then, in primary school, I remember, we used to get free food. There were food programs then. We used to get free milk. Today, I don't know what happened in the schools.
And look, there's been, obviously, what you're saying is there's been a serious degradation to services offered in Nairobi over the
yes.
course of, I don't know how many years,
yes.
10, 15, 20 years, something
yes.
like this, right? And we'll get into that as well, because obviously you are going to be vying for a seat and making those decisions, hopefully,
yes.
to improve the city of Nairobi. What is it like for you, though, having, when you look at your history in Nairobi, you're a Nairobi boy through and through.
Sure.
And you look now at I don't want to say the last 10 years was a disaster, but I mean, I think we can all be honest, it wasn't what we had hoped for. Without naming names, we know
yes.
who the governor was, so that's not really a mystery. In those 10 years, forget the time before those 10 years, these last 10 years, is this where the real damage has been done to service delivery in Nairobi?
Precisely. I want to say that one of the things that we did not see is... Okay, we have seen the growth of the population has been growing day by day. And we know earlier in the years, the population in Nairobi was about 500,000 people. And therefore, there was a master plan that was, put together, was developed to serve the population, 500,000. Today, the population is over 4 million. In fact, the people who come to Nairobi to seek for opportunities are another 2 million. So we are talking of about 6 million. You cannot have a master plan that is serving the 500,000 to serve 6 million is not possible at all.
I mean, it's exponentially higher, yes, the population.
It is very high. Look at the infrastructure as well. Secondly, do we have policies that will come to support whatever manifesto that you have as a governor? If you look at the last regime, what kind of policies then do you have in terms of trade policies to come and support those who are doing business, or the infrastructure or connectivity in the city? And what are the bylaws that we are going through? What are the bylaws that are being used? Are we able, as an assembly, county assembly, able to change the bylaws that were used then by our mayors to accommodate the new environment that we have today?
Mm-hmm. So let me ask you a question then. Let's assume we get through this. You are the governor of Nairobi, and you come in. What is the first point of? I mean, what is the number one on the agenda, on Richard's agenda? What do you attack first?
Yes, I think the first thing that I would want first to do is to put up a task force within the first 1 week. And I would expect the task force to take not more than 30 days to give me a comprehensive report on the challenges that are in Nairobi. However, we have seen the challenges because I've worked in almost all the 85 wards. I've gone to speak to elders and leaders and the community leaders as well. I've spoken to the youth, and I already have the problems at hand, at the fingertips. I know the challenges they're facing. I know the solutions that I'm going to provide. But I want then to have that task force to come and tell me, yes, this is what we have seen, and I will be able to compare that and what are the statistics that I already have. I will then be able to prioritize the challenges and prioritize the deliverables. Number one, the challenges that I've seen today, and after speaking to women and families, water is a big problem. Water shortage mm-hmm. is a big problem. We need to solve that issue.
As you say water shortage, sorry to cut you off, but as you were, you're not talking about water shortage in the lower income areas. Water shortage across the city is a
big
problem.
Yes, entire Nairobi, I can tell you. The water that we receive from Ndakaini, from Muranga, today, we don't know where that water goes to because there's a lot of wastage. All pipes busting and everything. Number two, we need to deal with carbon emission. We need to rehabilitate all our water pipes. We need to rehabilitate our boreholes. We need to have every household having running water. Today, the problem, I can tell you, with the social sector is that they take too much time fetching water. It is too costly for them. I believe you and I, per liter, I think we are paying 6 cents. The common Mwananchi actually is paying over a shilling. It is 20 shillings per 20 liters. And that means that they will buy the jerry cans, they will get transport from the Bukoko tennis and the carts. It becomes very costly and also time wasting as well. And how guaranteed are they that that is clean water? Mm-hmm. Well, we have seen NMS come in at least to try and mitigate that problem by putting a few of boreholes, free water, which is very encouraging. But we need every wards within the 85 wards in Nairobi to have clean and available and running water everywhere. Capital
FM. This morning we have Richard Ngatia, who will be vying for the gubernatorial. I always find that term very strange, gubernatorial. It's a very strange term. But anyway, you'll be vying for the governorship of Nairobi coming up very soon. And it's, how they say, all systems go on your part, I'm sure. Before we get back into the changes you'll make, and I do definitely want to touch on how the governor's office will work with NMS. We'll talk about that in a little while. Yes. Before we get into that, every article I Googled about you yesterday, even though I've read things about you before, mentioned the term billionaire was mentioned. Now, And that's a very important part, I believe, when we talk about someone going into an office with access to that kind of money, having your own funds and finances and being self-made in your own way.
Yes.
Let's say a rich man. Is that something that is a positive when someone is taking office in Kenya? Because we know the corruption that happens in offices. And I'm not saying anything about you or your moral fiber. I'm just saying we know. Is it important that for you to say, look, I have my money. That's not why I'm doing this.
I think it is important just to understand that it is not about money, and I don't want to say and to use the word rich. I'm not rich, but I'll say I do have that capacity. And let me just take you back to Kenya National Chamber of Commerce and Industry, where I serve as the president. When I was vying for that position, I was vying for that position to come and fix issues that are there and to take over from the leadership that was there. And because of my experience in corporate leadership and governance, I was able to put things together. I was able to bring donors and supporters and the national government and programs to support our members, SMEs. Now, coming to Nairobi, yes, I am a business person, and I just said earlier that I want to bring business to politics. For me, it is not about to come and get what is there. It is to come and fix the problems. Mm-hmm. And I will tell you why. During my tenure at the Kenya National Chamber, and as the president, and also as the chairman of 12 countries of the Great Lakes region, I travel to almost every country in the world, and I see the kind of governance that is there, the kind of integrity and ethics, and I want to bring that experience and leadership to Nairobi. We must fix our Nairobi. As a businessman and as the private sector, sometimes we are left wondering what happened to Nairobi and how can we be able to compete with the neighboring countries? How can we be able to attract as many foreign direct investors into our country? How can we make Nairobi as the financial hub of Africa? Today, we are discussing African Continental Free Trade Area through the agreement within the African continent. We want to tap the 1.4 billion market. But how do you do that if we are having issues and problems in Nairobi? For me, I want to come in to bring my experience, to bring my leadership, and also to put things together and to fix Nairobi. We are tired, honestly, to come to Nairobi and see the kind of congestion in our streets. We are tired to come to wake up every morning and see hawkers being chased away from Nairobi. We are tired of seeing matatus always in problems and trying to negotiate with the government every day. We are tired to see the problems within the health sector. We are tired, honestly, with the leadership that we have seen so mm-hmm. far. And I believe probably is that people who are not experienced and who do not understand business, that is the challenge that we are facing today.
And that could be the challenge we had for the last 10 years, I believe, as well. Before exactly. we get into specific things in Nairobi,
yes.
There's an article here I came across yesterday, and I think, everyone has a place to speak their mind and their truth. Ngati are linked to 63 billion shilling medical equipment deal. Megascope, a firm associated with the president of KNCCI, and it says here, and an Uhuru ally, was subcontracted by a Chinese firm in a 5.4 billion shilling deal. Can you address that? I know many people know this story.
I'll be happy to address it.
Yeah.
I can tell you first and foremost that the issue of 63 billion contracted to Megascope, that is hearsay, that is propaganda. And I want to put things straight, that there was a contract of 45 billion under the managed equipment service, and this was to international bodies, international manufacturers, OEMs, original manufacturers, not any local contractors. And therefore, we as local contractors were mandated to actually partner with the OEMs. I partnered with one of the Chinese companies, and the contract was 4.5. 45 billion was actually distributed to several companies. Manufacturers. One of the manufacturers actually went with 24 billion from America. The other one was from Netherlands, which went with about another 4 billion.
And they're not even
another
mentioned.
Another one is 8 billion, which is from India. Another one from Italy, right. That went with about another 3 billion. My principals were able to be awarded 4.5 billion.
And everything above board.
It was above board. This went to actually went all this propaganda came in. Of course, the investigators took it up, EAC took it up, DCI took it up, and Parliament took it up. It was discussed. All companies, manufacturers, and actually directors from all these global international companies were invited to Parliament. They came, they cleared the air. We, as the local contractors, were able to show how we distributed equipment, have been servicing equipment. It was a 7-year contract. We had the 7-year already. And I can tell you, we have supported not only the health system, but the national government to make sure that they're deliverables.
But it must have been a very stressful time for you to have all this coming out, in
it
the
is,
press.
It is, because when I look at other countries, like I said, I travel a lot. You don't criminalize businesses. You don't criminalize private sector. Now, the problem here in our country is that when you have your competitors and they're aggrieved, they have not gotten their business, the first thing they're going to do is go on social media and create issues.
Right.
Now, we are very quick as a Kenya, we are very quick as a people to take up issues and make a decision based on what you've just read that morning,
mm-hmm.
without sourcing for facts and all that.
Did it affect you in terms of from a business perspective, all this bad press?
Of course, that was a character assassination.
Right.
We did go to court ourselves. Most of the manufacturers went to court, but we are still continuing with that business. But of course, in terms of character assassination, it is not right to criminalize business. This again happened the other day when we, as a private sector, tried to support Kenyans when, you know, there was a pandemic and when the first case of COVID-19 came in. Again, it was the same thing. At KEMSA, they were able to request all companies whether they could be able to support them with the tools and the PPEs. But remember, that was new to us. We have never had such a pandemic before. Not only Kenya, but the entire world. These products came from only one country, China. And let me tell you, China prioritized on who they are going to give those tools and PPEs and equipment. America was one of the countries that was prioritized. Europe as well. In fact, the UK. Kenya or Africa was actually not even on the list, I remember. And we, as the private sector, worked very closely with the government to see how can we be able to bring these products together. Now, I can tell you for a fact that Kenya did not suffer so much in terms of deaths like many other countries we saw in Europe.
This is very true.
Do you know the reason why? Because of the same tender that you criminalized, that every hospital had equipment, every county had what we call anesthetic machines, and we had ventilators, inbuilt ventilators. And therefore, whether it was Lamu, whether it was Nyanza, whether it was any other county, they were able to handle their issues within the theaters. The only thing they did is to move one of the equipment, the anesthetic machine, to an isolation area as they wait for the new model of ventilators. Now, we had about, KEMSA actually dealt with about more than 120 companies. But again, they chose about very few companies, about 20 companies. They were naming every day. This, of course, is the infight between the private sector.
Right.
Which, again, is
and
not...
And other companies in your same field, I would imagine, that
yes.
also tried to get this tender or tried to get some of these, what they call the COVID billions,
of course,
right?
Even international companies came to help us. They
right.
came to help us as Kenya.
Right.
Yes.
So we never really get the other side of the story sometimes. When the press decides that's where they're going, that's where they go.
But we were given a chance by the health committee in Parliament. They invited all the bidders and all the contractors. Then we were able to air and demonstrate how we received the awards, how we delivered. And at that time, actually, most contractors or most companies were not paid. To date, companies are still not paid, because then the budgets, we went to another year. And definitely there was that negotiation. There were so many investigations from all institutions within the government, Parliament, Senate. There was the Health Committee, there was PIC, there was PAC, and Implementation Committee as well. And we went through all that process.
All right. And still.
And yes. But again, I want to say we still continue that business in other countries. In fact, those people who supported the government and supported the social sector were actually given accolades.
Right.
In Kenya, we were criminalized. COVID billionaires. Now, I just want to ask one question.
Sure.
We have this problem today on fuel issues. And we can see it's a serious problem. Now, we have marketers on fuel. In the next 1 month, are they going to be called fuel billionaires? Yeah. Because they have supported us. Fuel has become so expensive.
Yes, very true.
Yes.
Very true. No, that's totally understandable. Now, let's get back into what's coming up for you. And thanks, because I think our listener would have wanted to know your side of that story. Now, let's assume you get into office this year as Nairobi's new governor. NMS is already structurally embedded,
yes,
taking over from our previous governor, Mike Sonko.
Yes.
And thank goodness for that, I think we can all say. And NMS, to be fair, with their limited, finesse,
yes,
have managed to do a decent job.
Yes.
Things started moving again in Nairobi.
Sure.
Will you work closely with NMS? Is that now going to be the kind of the new model for the governors? For Nairobi governor, I should say.
Let me say, you said if we get, I'll say when.
When?
NMS is doing a great job, a very good job. However, there are certain things that must be looked at. And yes, when I get into that position as a governor, I will definitely work with them. I will definitely work with NMS. And of course, enhance and be able to work very, very closely with them. But I just want to remind you that Section 4 of the Constitution says that the county government will be able to take up all matters of the county. However, because of the problems that we have seen before, the government very quickly put together a team and a department within the NMS so that they can be able to implement what we call the universal health coverage and also deliverables to the public. And we have seen that they're doing a very, very good job. But I want to say that as the county of Nairobi, we do have experts at the planning department and very, very competent people, I must say. But we want to see within the executive, who do we have there that can be able to give and provide that leadership? I think that's where the problem is. Not about the infrastructure, not about the secretariat. These guys are very competent. And I've spoken to many of them in my tenure as the chamber president, because we support them. We even write trade policies for them, but they're never implemented.
Mm-hmm.
They're never implemented at all. And so
we need a decision maker.
A decision maker.
That can say,
yes,
we're doing this, we're not doing this. We're
and
doing
somebody
that.
Who will be able to work with the assembly. Somebody who will be able to work with MCAs. Somebody who will be able to work with them so that they can pass policies, formulate policies that are favorable to business environment.
Right.
Policies that are favorable to trade. Policies that are favorable to the social sector. And they should be able to know how do you implement the master plan, and how are you implementing the bylaws. The bylaws that we use today, I think our bylaws then in 1973, today, what can we do to change some of those bylaws and the policies so that they can be able to favor our business, our tax regime, and so on and so forth?
Okay, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk about how you fix 10 years of mismanagement as a businessman. You've probably done that in your career from a business perspective. Now you're bringing business to the city of Nairobi. You've got 10 years, I would say, of bad governance, if I can be so bold to say, that you have to take, you have to try and fix in 10 years. We'll be right back with Richard Ngatia. FM. All right, you can catch John Sibi Okumu every Wednesday. And if you miss it, you can catch it on SoundCloud. This interview as well, this conversation with Richard Ngatia, will also be available on SoundCloud today. So if you are just joining us and you've missed a little bit of it, fear not. You can listen in a bit later on in the day. But we're getting straight back into the conversation this morning with Richard Ngatia, who will be vying for the Nairobi governorship come August 9th. Now, we just talked about, as a business person, as someone who is very, very successful in business, you have probably come into businesses or seen businesses that you can look at an overview and say, okay, this business is not running the way it should. And I'm sure with your mind, you would already think about ways you could fix that business.
Yes.
Is that how you look at Nairobi, as a business that has failed?
Precisely. Let me say, yes, this is a business that has failed. And remember, when businesses are flourishing, the entire private sector, social sector, everyone will be able to survive. And this is what we are lacking in, making sure that we support our businesses. And look at, for example, simply look at Gikomba. where most of the businesses are in Nairobi, in Nyamakema, in the Juakali, in Bama, if you cannot fix simple problems like this sewage problems, then that is a big problem for you. If you cannot fix issues of fire, this destruction of businesses because of fire, you don't have even a fire station within a very populated area like Gikomba.
And a you're place that catches fire very often.
Yeah. You're missing the point.
Yeah.
Even the entire Nairobi, you do have a one fire station with few engines, you're missing the point. I can say this because if you look at the number of times you hear destruction of businesses because of fire in Gikomba is worrying. It's very worrying. And many other parts of Nairobi. Look at, for example, the simple amenities, facilities, toilets. We only have how many toilets in Nairobi? 13 toilets, public toilets.
Are you serious? It's that low?
To serve 4.7 million population. In Gikomba, where we have a huge population,
yeah,
we have one.
Yes, and that is people that are working from 5 a.m. to 10 p.m. every day.
And I believe the leadership of the county knows this, but they have done nothing about it. That now brings health issues. And that is one of the components that I would want to come and deal with, family. I would want to come and see how do we have hospitals, for example, level 2, level 3, or level 4, or even referral hospitals within the constituencies or within the 85 wards. Every ward must have at least at a minimum level 2. But we should put extra efforts to have level 4s in every constituency, at least to have that to serve people, to serve women, to make sure that all these hospitals in are well equipped, and of course access of drugs.
Mm-hmm.
One of the other things we must do as a county is to make sure that we connect all these hospitals to referral hospitals, to Kenyatta Hospital, to KU Hospital, and even to other referral hospitals in our country, and level 5 hospitals as well. Why? Because we need services. We need to adapt to new technology. We need to adapt to what we call telemedicine and e-health, so that we can also connect to National Insurance Fund. Today, looking at how we can be able to get to what we call universal health coverage, this must be done. If you want to go for a scan today, you want to spend minimal time with your patient there. And how you can do that is get a scan. Today, we have a lack of what we call, say, doctors or radiologists who will be able to interpret your image when you scanned. And therefore, if you connect all these hospitals with what we call picture archiving systems, you will be able to get a second opinion, or to get to your colleague who is either a radiologist or a radiographer who can be able to interpret for you. And therefore, the patient, as they wait within 10 minutes, they'll be able to get the results, they'll be able to get the readings, and the doctor will be able to either be able to send them to a hospital. And by doing that, you're already connected to either the nearest pharmacy or the nearest lab so that you can be attended to. That is what we call telemedicine and e-health.
And obviously that being your background as well, which is a huge plus for because obviously healthcare in, well, the whole country, but we're focusing on Nairobi, Nairobi is a problem.
Yes.
Can we talk about security? Because it just seems to get worse and worse and worse by the day here in Nairobi.
First of all, security starts with us as Nairobians. If we don't have, if the environment for business is not conducive, then the employment rate reduces. And therefore, what happens? We leave our youth vulnerable. These guys are hopeless. It is now going to 8, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
By the time you leave here, you'll see as many people, say at the Jivanji Gardens or somewhere, hopeless, don't know what to do, they don't know where to go. They believe when they come to Nairobi, they'll get a chance to get their meals, but it becomes a nightmare. The second thing is, how can we be able to have that kind of security in terms of police service? Yes, we are enjoying the police service, but we can scale the service that we get from the police. And what can we do as the county? The county Askaris must know that you're coming here to support your people. You're coming to support those that you're taking revenue from, not to harass them.
Mm.
Now, again, I go back to the policy. Do we have a policy that guides that askari, that guides that business, that when I come to Nairobi, I'm not going to be harassed? Do we have a policy to say that we must have a lighting system within our environs? Today, businesses are closed most at 5 to 6 p.m. because people want to rush home. Others want to go to informal sectors. You can't walk there beyond that time because of insecurity, because it is not lit, because the roads have not been impassable, I can tell you.
And because the police presence is not there.
Yes, and then because of the rate of poverty, everybody is looking at, where can I get a meal today? Where can I get a coin today? And therefore, the person who has been at the CBD, who has gone to earn a living, somebody will want to take that opportunity and advantage to take that from them. Sometimes these people are not criminals, but they're turned into criminals by the leadership of the county, because we need to support them. We need, for example, to create jobs. How do you create jobs? There's so many ways of creating jobs.
Right.
How do we have a conversation with industrialists so that we can have as many jobs for the youth in those industries? How do we create jobs from the problems that we are seeing today, for example, garbage collection? If you go to Dandora today, you can be able to create as many jobs for the youth there as possible. We can have a recycling plant that can take as many people as possible. How do we expand SEZs, special economic zones? How do we expand what we call industrial parks? These are the places where we can have cottage industries to support SMEs, to support the micro. Mm. How do we support Mamba Boga? How do we look at agriculture? We don't have land to farm in Nairobi, but we can use what we call hydroponics. We can support Mama Boga so that they can be able to farm from their own house. They can use hydroponics. They can be able to get their tomatoes, their vegetables within their own house, within their corridors. They can either sell or use that with their family.
Right.
That is something that we need to capacity build this the social sector. So in terms of security, there are so many things that you need to look at, starting with the policy at the county level and how we're going to support security. And then the transport system. If the transport system, again, is not right, if you have people walking from one point A to point B with a place that is not secure, a place that is not lit, we have seen even NMS actually doing very good corridors and roads. But do that road connect you to the highway? Does that road connect you to the other street? You need to have connectivity in terms of roads as well. You have to have what we call the security system, the videos and all
CCTV,
that.
The CCTV
everywhere. And we also need to improve our lighting, the roads, what do you call this, the street lights.
Yeah,
we need to improve.
Right. Yes, and all that will add to better security. Damage has been done in the last 10 years. We've established that. You've got 5, possibly 10 years ahead of you as the governor of Nairobi.
Yeah.
If we were to fast forward now to 2027 August, 5 years on, as you're going for your second term, what would Nairobi look like?
A smart city.
Right.
Nairobi would be. If you went to Dubai 10 years back, Nairobi would be that way.
Okay.
In the next probably 3 years, we'll try and bring back the glory to Nairobi. We will we will invest in making sure that tourism in Nairobi, we can be able to attract as many tourists. Culture, our culture is very rich. What do we do? For example, in Kariokor Market, we used to see our women very busy, actually even selling their curios out of this country in the US. Today, that does not happen. In Marikiti, in many markets, Maasai Market today, we need to make sure we take advantage of that to have as many tourists as possible. Now, look at the blue economy. What do we have? Do we have any dam in Nairobi? All the dams, we must rehabilitate them so that it can be a recreational center. We have several dams here. I went to Cairo the other day. Cairo, if you remember 10 years back after the revolution, Cairo was destroyed completely.
Yeah.
Today is a different city. That is what I want to see in those 10 years.
Right.
In 10 years, Cairo has attracted all brands in the world, all industrialists in the world, all manufacturers in the world. That is what Nairobi should be. And because of the support that we are getting within the Cosmopolitan, we must do something. Nairobi holds 60% of the GDP. So looking at 11 trillion GDP of this country, and it's moving. By end of this year, I believe it's going to be 13 billion. Now, 60% of that means you are supporting the entire 46 counties. And therefore, we must make things right. We must fix our systems. We must look at our educational programs. We must have daycare centers to support our women. We must support single women. We must support widows. We must support the youth, like I said, to adapt what we call digital economy. We must support startups so that we can also protect their rights through intellectual property. We must make sure that these guys are supported. We must make sure that industrialists are supported. And tax regime is one thing that we must give waivers. We must have a conversation with Kenya Revenue Authority to see how do we give waiver to startups to this micro 7 years at least before even you start speaking to them. We must capacity build them on financial literacy, and so that and we must again have what we call guarantee schemes through the national government to the counties to support the financial institutions so that they can see the SMEs as a non-risk to them.
Yusuf has said, Mr. Ngatia, kindly be mindful of Mitumba traders when you assume office. I think when you talk about micro and small businesses, you're referring to Mitumba traders as well.
Yusuf, let me tell you, I also sold Mitumbas when I was young. So I know the problems you're going through right now, and I'm going to enhance and I'm going to build that sector, and I'm going to make sure that we have a conversation with the national government so that we can return that business to you.
Right. And before we close, I just want to get I mean, it sounds like you have a great plan for the city. It sounds like your plan will actually and hopefully influence other governors to follow suit in different parts of the country. But, you know, we always like to know a little bit more about the person. What does the average day look like for you right now?
For me, I can say it's a bit challenging, and especially right now that I've gone into politics. But I want to say for me, it's a plus for me because there's so many things that I'm learning. There's so many areas that I've not been able to penetrate before that I've gone. I've had conversations with people I've never had a conversation with, even though I was their leader in terms of business, social sector that I've been able to have a conversation with. So in every day as I wake up, I look at how do I tackle the challenges of yesterday and how do I turn them into opportunities? That is one thing that we do in business. Look at the challenges that are there. Look at the problems that are there. Turn them into opportunities. You don't complain too much, but provide solutions. Now, what has happened to the current and previous leadership in this Nairobi is that they also complain the same way as we complain. They should be providing solutions for us. And therefore, I want to say that to me, it's a very good challenge for me, and at the same time, a very good arena for me. But I know what I'm going for. I know what I want to do. And I said, we are tired about what you're seeing in Nairobi, and we must fix it, all of us. We must hold hands together and fix it. On Sunday, this Sunday, which will be 10th, I'm actually having one of the biggest rallies in Kangemi, where I live. I'm now going to seek for blessings so that the entire Westlands, the entire Nairobi, can be able to give me their blessings and tell me now, go for it, go Ngatia. And I'll be able to tell them what I'm going to do for them in the next 100 days and beyond. And I want to say, if I fix Nairobi for those 5 years, I may not need even to continue. All I want is to fix Nairobi so that you, the private sector, can have a conducive place to work in.
That's wonderful.
We want to take up from where His Excellency the President has taken over, the directions he has taken us, the agenda he has of 2030. Right now, the agenda is they have four agenda: food security, health, manufacturing, and agriculture. We want to make sure that by the time he ends his term, we have met that target. But beyond, we want now to go to 2030 vision. And that is where we want to make sure that our county as Nairobi can have a conversation with African continent. We can be able to penetrate the Africa, the 1.4 billion and do business and go beyond. Nairobi actually should be better than Singapore It used to be many years back.
Mm.
It used to be.
And if I'm not mistaken, our independence for the country came at the same time, yes. Right?
Nairobi used to be better than Dubai.
Yeah.
And we must attract as many businesses here, FDIs, as possible.
All right. Listen, Richard Ngatia, it has been an absolute pleasure to meet you. And we look forward to seeing you the day after your inauguration right here at Capital FM.
Thank you very much for it. Thank you very much, you listeners. I believe I'll come back again.
100%.
May God bless you.
Thank you. Capital FM.